It's Justin Roiland doing most of the voices, which is the voice of Rick and Morty. So it's essentially a Rick and Morty game, but all of your weapons talk and are alive, and they're hilarious. The knife loves stabbing people, very vulgar. Like says things like, I'm going to cut you a new asshole and watch all your shit fall out of you. Stuff like that. It's wonderful. Awesome. Hey, hey, hey. Welcome back to the Distinguished Humans Indie Game Dev Club. I'm your host, Brad, along with your other host, Zach. Hello, Zach.
Hello, everybody.
This is take two. Zach was coming at us with some crazy... crazy robo sounds. That actually might be my low effort opening, the pre-show opening we do.
Yeah,
you may have just heard Zach's weird robo voice.
Yeah, I was just trying to test out some AI stuff, I guess, you know. Yeah. All the hype and paranoia around it right now.
We can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah,
there's the Snapchat AI is pretty funny. I could go on about that for a bit. I don't know if you, I do nothing with Snapchat, but I literally use it to schedule my hairdresser appointments.
That's amazing.
Because, you know, my hairdresser's 15 years younger than me, and that's how you talk to people 15 years younger than me, is with Snapchat, apparently. So
yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's
weird.
There's a bunch of other people that I know that I have on Snapchat, but like I don't use it for anything besides, anyway.
Yeah.
I digress. So anyway, we're back. It's been a bit. It's been almost a month, I think. Let me take a look. I was just wondering when our last show was.
I think you're right. I think it has been a month. It's been a crazy, crazy month.
It has. It's been a lot going on. It's been a little over a month, actually. April 18th. Oh, wow. So the day after my birthday. And actually before that was March 20th. So wow, we're trending about a monthly show at this point.
Whew.
Yeah. Well,
that's what happens when life gets busy.
It is getting busy. I know, Zach, you got a lot of stuff. We'll get to that here in a moment. A lot of fun stuff. I know a lot of you have heard about it leading up to, even if you're just a listener of the show, Zach's been telling you about some of the exciting stuff going on for him this summer. So some of that has begun. Excited to hear about that. I've had a ton of just transitionary things going on. We were on a house hunt for a while, which was pretty exciting. Ultimately, I think we've decided to just kind of pump the brakes on that right now for a couple reasons. One, the economy is just batshit crazy right now.
I was going to say it's really out of whack right now, especially in the housing market.
Yeah. And I mean, it might just be like that from now on. You don't know. That could just be how it is. So if you want to buy a house, there's no sense in like waiting just because the economy is crazy. But there are certain other things that also make it go, well, this is really not the right time. One is like all of these major banks failing.
Yeah.
Like I think I told you when Silicon Valley Bank hit, that impacted me directly.
Yes. And, yep.
You know, so that was a big deal. Since then, I think at least two other major banks have crumbled. That's not good. That's not good for the financial industry. We've got this whole standoff in Congress with the debt ceiling situation,
which
that's causing some ruckus. Then we're going into an election year, and this country loses its effing mind during election years, right? So,
yes, so sir.
I don't think 2023, 2024 is a good time to buy. There's some other reasons too, but personal reasons, but mainly keeping Ollie in his school district. My stepson. So, but yeah, it's we're happy. We're happy the way things are. We're happy that we explored that and decided that, you know what, let's just keep doing what we're doing right now, and everything's just fine. And so things are starting to settle again, and I think we're both, you know, when I say both, me, I mean Malia and I kind of both just coming around to going, you know what, we're comfortable with the situation. We're making little improvements here and there. And let's just keep doing that. We don't got to move mountains right now. Well,
that's all that matters. As long as as long as you're both happy with the decision, that's the important bit.
Right.
So
yeah, let's get into the mountains that are moving for you. You do have quite a bit of paradigm shifts happening right now.
Yeah, man. So just got through like the hardest semester I think I've ever had in my entire time in college. I did 2 18 credit hour semesters in a row. Just for some context, that's 6 classes and they're all 3 credit hours.
Jesus.
Yeah, the last one actually wasn't as bad. It was mostly just one class that was a problem. All the rest were actually very light on the work I had to do outside of school. This time around, it was bad. At the height of the semester, basically, the worst part of it, I had 8 active projects at any given time, or at the height of it all. 8 projects, 4 of which were team-based projects. 2 of those I was a team leader for. Sorry.
Okay, yeah.
I was a team leader for. So I was just like, I was feeling overwhelmed, very much so. It even got to a point where I was so overwhelmed that I just kind of stopped caring. And I think that was best for my mental health, to be totally honest. And I don't mean stopped caring as in like I didn't do any work. I pretty much shifted my entire focus to the team-based stuff. In anything I was doing solo, I did what I called the good enough.
Yeah.
I didn't go above and beyond like I normally do. It was, nope, this is good enough. I'm submitting that. And that's what they're getting. And I still got through just fine. I have 4 A's and 2 B's. So
it's awesome.
You know, worked out. And there's also the other side of it, which is the big one. And this is the one I'm stoked to talk about, is my new job.
Yeah.
Once I realized I had a job lined up, it did make things a little easier to enter that good enough phase for school. Mm-hmm. Because now I got what I came to college for, you know, is this career job. And I'm not really going to go into the details because I'm not sure what I'm allowed to share yet. I'd have to talk with my boss, although I don't think they would care. I just would rather.
Yeah, you know, don't risk that.
Yeah, you know, dot my I's, cross my T's sort of thing. But I am having a lot of fun at this job. I love the team I work with. We are considered a startup within a company that has been around for almost 100 years.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting little dynamic we have going on. And it's a very small team, which is kind of what I was hoping for as a, you know, first job out of college, because I have a lot of responsibility. And while I am considered an intern for the summer, I will convert to a full-time employee come fall. And pretty pumped about that. As long as I don't screw anything up, which at this point I'm fairly confident I won't. But you know how sometimes fate just throws things at you.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. No, I am confident in my own skills that I think I'll be okay. I've already gotten 2 tasks and I actually completed them literally at the end of day Friday. So that was like, I was actually surprised that I got the second task done before then, because that one was pretty daunting. And without going into too much detail, we are using technically a third party software. This software has some seriously very inefficient use of code. And all of my coworkers have reminded me of it. It was stated in my job interview, that I'd be facing these challenges, and boy, when they said that, they probably couldn't have said it enough. 'Cause even in my head, I was thinking, yeah, okay, inefficient code. Yeah, whatever. Everybody has inefficient code. And no, man, there's stuff happening in this architecture that just I don't get.
Is it in the code base that you're like modifying, like that you're working with? Mm-hmm. Or is it like the tools that you're using?
It's the code base itself. Yeah.
Okay.
With the tool we use at our company. And that's what my team's kind of in charge of. Our goal is to move everything from this third party to everything in-house.
Got it.
But yeah, so but that's kind of like why we're considered like a startup within this company. But it's not, but we don't want like bad blood either with the other company that we're partnered with, because, you know, there's like family ties between these companies as well. So we're just trying to do it in the most respectful way. We don't want to just say, well, you know what? Screw you. Here's the finger. We're doing it ourselves.
Yeah. Your stuff sucks.
Yeah. And it's like, and the thing is, it's not even that it sucks, but I can totally see, I understand where their brain was. Like when I'm reading this code, I can see what whoever was making this was thinking, but it's also one of those things where it's like, it felt really rushed. Like as I'm running through the stuff, I feel like things were rushed.
Yeah.
And I could understand why you might want to shift to everything in house at that point. And, yeah, it's interesting, man, but I do like my job. Again, love my team, love the job itself. It's very laid back as far as like the atmosphere. Everybody gets along. I was told they do have moments of stress, but you know, the way I see it is every job has these crunch moments where you got to like power through. So, but it is far different from anything I've ever worked in my entire life, my entire professional life. For those of you who are unaware, I've worked for the government pretty much since I was 18, whether it be federal or local. And, I worked like law enforcement related jobs when I got out of the military. So I've never experienced anything private entity other than little side jobs I've done, and that's about it. So
yeah,
this is all new to me. This, like, my boss telling me, you know, if there's anything you need to help you be more comfortable here and be more efficient and not have to like stress over silly little things like your foot hurting or your back hurting while you're sitting here, he's like, you know, let me know. And I'm thinking in my mind like, whoa, I've never heard that out of anybody's mouth.
No one ever said that when I was in the Marines for some reason.
And like, I started, it's so stupid. So like day one, I'm thinking like, okay, whatever. And then all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, because I use the standing desk. I have a standing desk at work.
Yeah.
And I try to stand for at least 2 hours every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm standing there and the one girl I work with is like, oh, we got to let, you know, so-and-so know with the boss, you know, got to let him know that when he gets back from vacation that you need a standing mat to stand on. And I'm like,
Oh yeah. Okay.
And like, there's just all these little things, man. And then by Wednesday, dude, I started thinking in my head, all right, what could I use? Like what would make me more comfortable at my desk? And it's just so silly. These little things that I've never gotten before. I feel like a freaking, like I got out of an abusive relationship and I found one that's like healthy and happy.
It's so funny that you put it, that you framed it up that way, because I doubt anybody. Well, okay. I don't want to mention that, but there is a person that I am close with that is in a really bad situation with their job.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Like not even metaphorically, like pretty much literally.
Yeah.
It is causing psychological damage at this point. And we were framing it up that way when we were talking about it recently. And I was giving them the example of my job. And like when I leave work, I don't think about work.
Yeah,
like dude. I walk away, I shut my laptop off, and then I go make dinner, and then I'm just not at work anymore, and I'm not at work again until the next morning when I open my laptop back up.
Yeah,
and when I am at work, I am able to do things at my own pace. Same thing, like I have a standing desk here at my house. We were talking about that, you and I, earlier this week or last week. You know, like and this is work provided. You know, like it's same stuff. And it is kind of like, it makes sense from a business point of view. We want our workers to be comfortable because that's going to make them the most productive.
Right.
It's going to keep them healthy. It's going to make it so they don't have to call in sick because their back hurts or they have carpal tunnel.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then the other part of that was when they make a mistake at work. They are absolutely lambasted over it, like just abused, you know,
that's rough.
And to the point that they're starting to think that I'm not good at this. Like, I don't, maybe I'm not in the right profession. I'm like, no. You're really good at this. I can tell. But your manager just really sucks at being a manager.
Yeah.
Because I make mistakes all day, every day.
Sure.
And the people that I work with, my peers, and the people that are in charge of me, you know, my team leader and so on, they, if they see that I make a mistake, they might point it out, you know, hey, this needs to be like this. We do code reviews on each other. So we're constantly pointing at each other's mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we do the code reviews. And then it goes through QA, and their entire job is to find your mistakes.
Yeah.
And like, yep, that is literally what we pay them to do. And they throw stuff back and say, this isn't right. Got to do it again. But there's no malice in it. You know, if you have questions about how to do it right, like, people fall over themselves at my company to help you figure out how to do it. Like, they're, mm-hmm, they're like aggressively helpful. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
And I was explaining that, and they were just like, no, like, I have no idea what that would feel like. You know, like, and I'm, they're in a process. I have a lot of bites going on right now with some new opportunities coming up. And I just keep advising, like, be incredibly picky, because I'm telling you, when you feel what kind of like the things that you were just explaining,
yeah,
and how I feel at work, it's transformative to your life. Like, and this is advice I give to everybody listening. If you hate your job, like, you don't have to love your job.
No,
it's nice if you do. I love my job.
Mm-hmm.
I loved my job previous to this as well. You don't have to love it, but don't hate it. If you get up every day and you just absolutely hate it, and it is just crushing who you are in your soul, like, that is the majority of what you do in, mm-hmm, you know, in your working years is your job. Like, yeah, you get up, if you're a 9-to-5er, you know, you have enough time to get up in the morning, do nothing really, just get presentable to get to your job,
mm-hmm,
and then do your job. Then you have enough time to get home. And if you're not single, if you have a family, the rest of your night is just taking care of the family before you crash and then go do it again the next day.
Yep.
And then you have your weekend. And if you are single, you don't have much more time. You might be able to watch a show on Netflix or play some games before you crash, but still, the majority of your day is your job. So don't go do that all day and hate yourself and hate what you do. Find something that you like a little better, even if it pays a little less.
Mm-hmm. And like, the valuable other thing too is, just to put it in perspective, not even including a commute if you have one, you know, a 40-hour work week is
a commute.
Yeah. So yeah, like, if you have to commute, like, drive to your job. Yeah, commute, commute, whatever. Words.
That was weird how you said that. Commute?
Yeah, commute.
Who
I don't know
that says commute.
Me.
I don't know. That's so
I
weird.
Don't know, bro. I don't say
is that
the
like
word
comrade?
Maybe. Maybe it is. Maybe there's this secret commie.
Wait, are you part Russian, Zach?
I am not. But I am actually Irish. But if you think about that amount of hours, just the 40 hours of work itself, not any drives or anything like that, that's 23.8% of your week.
Is that including, that's not including sleep, right?
That's not including sleep.
How much, then you got to think of how much time are you asleep?
Yeah. Yeah, sleep. That, I mean, let's, what, we want to assume 7 hours. Let's do 8 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see, 8 times 7. That is 33%.
Plus 20 what percent? What was
plus,
the other?
Plus 23.8. We could say 24 to round it.
So 24, 33, so we're at 67% of your week is, so a third, two-thirds of your week,
mm-hmm,
is sleeping and working if you work 40 hours like most people.
Yeah, so get that job that you don't hate.
Yeah.
That's the minimum right there.
Yes.
I do love my job for the other part of it too, which is I am expected to do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, day one, that pressure really hit me. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm the new guy. You know, obviously the imposter syndrome starts to creep itself into your brain and you're like,
yeah,
I really cut out for this. And then Wednesday, I like I went over a task list, because all I did for the first 2 days was tinker with our software as a customer, like from the customer's perspective, mm-hmm. And from the support side's perspective. So I got to see the two views of it and like tinker. And all I did was come up with a list of bugs or quality of life changes that I saw could happen. And Wednesday, I went over this list with my boss, and that's when I got assigned my two tasks, and that's when I finally got to dive into the code. And man, I started getting nervous that first day, and then the next morning I came in and I solved my first task. And then all of a sudden the nice. Confidence starts building, right? Like I start to feel a little better, and I'm starting to think, okay, if I have a task to do, it's a little easier because now I can start digging for the specific thing I'm looking for, right? And I cannot explain how big this code base is. It is massive, and it can be very difficult at times to find what you're looking for. Most of my day, Friday morning especially, was just spent literally using Control Shift F in Visual Studio to search the entire solution for keywords. And that was it.
So, I mean, you know what's funny? The fact that you're already doing that is pretty impressive, because it took me maybe 6 months before I realized how powerful of a tool that was.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's just, again, it's like little things. And the guy I work with actually graduated I call him my partner in crime, because him and I are both new. He's only been there for like 7 weeks. And okay. He actually graduated from your boot camp.
From Tech Elevator?
Yep. Same nice. One. So it was awesome. Cool. I told him about you and stuff. And I was like, you know, I told him how well you're doing and stuff. And it really pumped him up, you know, and this is his first job out of the boot camp. So
it's awesome.
Him and I are both like working together on the same stuff. Feels pretty cool to like work with a newbie. We're developing our own like communication and stuff. It's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. But there was something you mentioned before that I was going to talk on, but I don't remember what it was. But yeah, man, I love my job. It is like a fresh of like, oh, it was you talking about like when you leave work, you don't think about work. And like, I've never experienced that until now.
Yeah.
Literally, dude. Like every time I'd leave work, like when I worked as a dispatcher, my drive home was often in silence and just decompressing from the stress. And even then, by the time I got home, you know, that's only a 20-minute drive. So like, that's not enough time to process. And sometimes I'd be up for another hour just processing through. And this job, dude, I wake up, I make the drive, even on my way to work, I'm not even thinking about it, you know, and I get to work, I open up my laptop, I have a little notepad that I keep, you know, that they gave me that I write in, and I have my little tasks for the day that I wrote down the day before, and I just follow along with that, do my day, and then I get off work, I'm driving home, and the only thing on my mind if I think about work is like, damn, this is what it feels like to have a job you really are like happy in. That's all that I wrote. I don't think about what I'm doing at work. I don't think about what happened at work or what, you know, oh my God, I have this task or this project or whatever. I just think about like, wow, this is a totally different experience than what I have ever experienced in my life.
Right. Yeah. So, I would say that as adults, that is one of the most important things that you should probably do, even if you are working towards other things. Like if you're in school, like Zach is, you know, if he was working while he was going to school, for instance, he wasn't because he didn't have to. But
I will be starting tomorrow.
Yeah. But not everybody's that lucky to be able to go through school and not work. But you might have, you know, even if you're working towards other goals and you just have like a, you know, get you their job. That's fine. And as long as you don't hate that job, you know, great. But if you really hate it, and I mean hate, like if it's affecting your other parts of your life, like I've heard this from a lot of different people, and it was a few years ago that I heard it, and it was kind of an interesting point of view. And I think I've adopted it as my own. But they were talking about, I don't work to, work doesn't serve to, I don't live to work, I work to live, is what they said. So their job is a means to an ends regardless, even if you love your job.
Yeah.
You go to your job to have it provide you the life that you want.
Right.
So you're working to live your life. Mm-hmm. If you're not doing that, if you're working too much, or you're working at a place that you hate, then like all the other things that you're focused on in your life right now, anything else that you think might help with your self-esteem or your psyche or whatever, just put a pin in all that stuff and go get a new job and see if that doesn't fix it all for you. Yeah. 'Cause it probably will.
Oh yeah. Dude, 100%. I 100% back that, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only other thing I would say is in my personal life has improved. Like I, you know, this whole week, dude, I've developed a nice routine where, man, when I worked anywhere else, dude, if I came home and I had to mow the lawn, I dreaded it. I hated that. Like, I was like, no, I'm not. No. Like my mental state was just so shattered.
Yeah.
That like even mowing the lawn was like, I just want to jump off a cliff.
Right.
And like, this week I like my first day, I literally came home, mowed the lawn, and I was happy about it. I was like, no, this is great. It's like, I don't know, this dopamine hit. And that's what I'm getting from my job. Even when I'm struggling, yeah. I'm getting these little dopamine hits, and I just feel good about being there. So like when I come home, I'm in a good mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, it's so different. I'm just not used to this.
Yeah.
It's weird. I'm sure my wife's gotten like tired of hearing me talk about my job, but like, sure. And how happy I am. But dude, I really am. Like I can't express it, man. And I told all my friends I am in school with, some of them graduated this past semester. So like, I told them all, I was like, I really hope you guys find a job like this. Like,
mm-hmm.
Wherever you end up, I hope you get that, because, you know, it has changed the whole game for me. So.
Well, that's awesome, man. I'm really excited for you. And I think I can speak for all of our listeners to say congratulations.
Thank
on
you.
How hard you've worked. We've all been there watching you bust your ass, not only in school, but, you know, still pumping out game projects and still keeping this podcast going. And like, you've just been a machine, man. Not only on top of all that, you're still like working out and
yeah.
keeping your body right. And like, you're crushing it, dude. Keep
Thank
it up.
You.
And we're all very proud of you, and we're all rooting for you for the strong finish to 2023. And hopefully a transformative 2024 for you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's great, man. All right. What about the game world? What all that craziness you had going on? Any progress made on game stuff?
Yeah, unfortunately, there was no progress made, and that really comes down to how the semester played out. It was awful, man. The whole last 3 to 4 weeks. Of this whole semester, it was just hell. There were so many little things happening. We started to see like these glaring issues. Obviously, I'm going for computer science, and we have to do our senior design project, which is like your capstone project. And it's a two-semester course. So, you know, I started it in fall, you end it in spring. And at the very end, you get... When we first started this, we thought, oh, okay, all the computer science people will present their projects. We'll have a little competition, see who wins. I think like scholarship money or something gets tossed at you. You know, sounds great. Well, we find out like at some point, like, no, you're going up against all engineering disciplines. All of them are all going to compete against each other. And then we started learning from previous students who had already done senior design but hadn't quite graduated yet that, yeah, if you're computer science, you're not going to win. You won't even place. And that was like disheartening, right? So that already puts a damper on things when everybody's already at a low morale, because everybody I knew was in my boat where you have like this crazy busy semester loaded with classes and coursework. You know, every single person in my group, all of us, we were just slammed. And that just basically poured salt on that wound. So we were going into this like symposium thing, really disheartened. Nobody wanted to be there. And the only thing that made that entire thing tolerable and even at some points enjoyable was the fact I was there with so many people that I realized how big my network has grown.
Yeah.
And they also offered free alcohol. So, you know, being able to go grab a beer with all these guys who I've been busting my ass with for the past 2 years, you know, it was nice to do that. But at the end of it all, not one computer science project even got an honorable mention. And wow. What blows my mind is a good friend of mine, his group, made a thing that takes sign language and translates it. They can translate small phrases, and they can also translate letter spelling.
Wow. Did it work?
Yeah. Fully working program. Yeah, and outputs it to the screen and everything. And that's his present. Yeah, here's something else that's going to blow your mind. And this is why I thought his project should at least have been an honorable mention, is that deaf people, they have like an 82% increased cost of living on average in America.
Hmm.
Just because of translation services. Isn't that insane? Like,
it's just, it's crazy to me that something like that doesn't exist already.
I know. There's a ton of research into it, but my buddy managed to make a working, and they built their own libraries. They didn't use any pre-existing libraries from like Amazon, Microsoft. Like, I was in the lab with this dude every day because we both shared the same lab, because my project also used visual like interpretation and stuff, but mine was far less complex than his. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were both doing camera interpretations of various things. So we'd be shooting ideas off each other, and I would watch this dude, him and his team, every day building libraries, going through thousands of their own images and videos they created. And they did all this themselves, and they didn't get a lick for it. And it's like,
wow,
dude, crazy. There's another one that was made by a student team, which I thought was this is one of those things where I was like, wow, this doesn't exist already. That's crazy. They made a app for Muslims so they could determine if food items were halal or not, which means it's like it's good for them to have, like it's not against their religion.
Like kosher and, for Jewish.
Yeah. People. Yeah. So like what they would do is scan a barcode and it would tell you halal or not halal. And then if there was like, they had like caution symbols for items that might not be, you need to read the label further, because some of them aren't 100% clear and they couldn't interpret data 100%, but they had a catch in there for if the data couldn't be interpreted, they'd throw a caution thing up there and say, hey, read further. And it worked, dude. Like, this thing worked. They demoed it as part of their presentation. They were the only group I know of that demoed their project right in front of us during their presentation. Awesome. And I thought they were another phenomenal like pick, and nope, nothing. Hmm. And it broke my heart, dude. Cause it was like, whatever. But there was the one saving thing was, the assistant dean, who in all fairness, I do like her. She's a very good assistant dean. And she reached out to all the computer science students and computer engineering students after the fact and said, hey, I want you guys to be brutally honest. Tell me everything. Here's a survey. It's anonymous. You can put your name on it if you want. And I went all out and I even put my name on it. And I was like, I'm unashamed of anything I've said. And I was honest, but professional. So if there's anything, if they reach out to me, they reach out to me. If not, it's fine. Like I could care less either way.
Right.
But yeah, man, that was like the culminating event of my whole semester. And then the week after that, finals. And then what really bummed me out about that too, is like, I had to be at school all day. So I wasn't even with my family. And this was on Cinco de Mayo. So I didn't even get to spend time with my family. I had to go to this event, which was literally all day till like 8 p.m.
Yeah.
So it was just like, yeah, cool. I'm at a place I know I'm not going to get anything from. I'm away from my wife, my kids, my family. And it's like, bummer.
Right.
You know, and then finals week was after that. That was a little stressful, but I came out on top. So,
well, I didn't expect to get a whole lot of gaming updates. I know you've been really busy.
Yeah, I haven't touched it at all, man. It's just been rough. I just realized that too. All of that tirade right there came out of, how's gaming going?
yeah.
I apologize deeply. Oh, my goodness.
No, that's fine, man.
But yeah, that was why, basically.
Well, I mean, you know, your reaction to that question should speak volumes as to why not. You know, the fact that was, you've just been consumed with very important things. And you know, on that matter, so have I. You know, there's just been a lot of, I keep trying to figure out a way around the living in two cities thing.
Yeah.
I do that every now and again, and something looks promising, and it's like, and honestly, this last one wouldn't have even alleviated the two cities. It would have just made it to where we had a permanent home.
Yeah.
In Columbus, that would eventually be the home that I would live in, permanently. But you know, again, there's not, that was another reason why, is just no real reason to rush it right now. And it's not really a great market to be buying in anyway.
Yeah.
People are offering like, oh, we put an offer on a home, and I'm not going to give figures, but, it was at the very tippy top of what we wanted to spend on a house. I didn't want to be anywhere near what we were capable of spending. And this was pushing what we were capable of doing, but the house was completely finished. Like,
yeah,
the owners of the home just put tens of thousands of dollars into, so I think it was something like $40,000 or $50,000 worth of renovations that they recently did within the last year or two. So it was totally turnkey. The only things that we would have had to have done, not even had to, one of our dreams is a tiki basement. Ooh, which nice. I think our realtor listens to this show sometimes, actually. So he'll probably laugh because he was talking about it when we were out with some other people. He's like, yeah, every house I go into, they go in the basement and go, yeah, okay, we can do a tiki basement here. It's like seriously like a major selling point is that it needs to have tiki basement potential.
That's funny.
But that was really the only thing, is it was an unfinished basement, which is actually what I prefer.
Yeah.
A nice, clean, dry, you know, high enough ceiling, unfinished basement that I can create in my own image, you know,
like, nice. Yeah.
That I can make my own. And that's exactly what it was. So like we went higher. We offered significantly more than they were asking. And they even do this thing now, which I had never heard of, but it sweetens the pot of offers in hot markets. It's called an appraisal gap. Do you know what that is?
Oh, I just heard of this recently.
Yeah, it's like a new concept for me.
Yeah, I'm not 100% on it.
I'll give you an example of what an appraisal gap is. And for those of you out there that may or may not be in the job market or from another country going, look at what these crazy ass Americans do, because this is crazy. This is what happens. So if, let's say you're selling a house for $100,000. That's your asking price. And somebody comes in, they say, I'm going to offer $150,000 for that house. And then when the appraisal, and you guys accept the offer, you've accepted the offer for $150,000. Mm-hmm. And then the appraisal comes in. Well, it only appraises for $125,000. The bank isn't going to loan you any more than what it's worth.
Yeah.
So you're only going to get $125,000 from the bank. But the seller or the buyer said they're going to buy it for $150,000. So where does that other $25,000 come from that the bank ain't giving it to you?
Yeah.
If you don't have an appraisal gap, then you just get what the bank is willing to loan against. If they say with appraisal gap, basically what that says is if it is less, the appraisal comes in less than what we've accepted this offer, then we will give the rest of that to you in cash.
Hmm.
So at close, you would basically have the loan for $125,000, and then the buyer would cut a check for $25,000 to the seller.
Wow.
For that. And that's an incredibly common practice. So we had an offer well over what they were asking, included appraisal gap, which honestly I didn't think we were going to have to use. Because if it appraises for $150,000, then you're good. No, there's no cash. There's no additional cash.
Right.
So you're both kind of betting that it's going to appraise for that. Is essentially what you're doing.
Something you might want to look into in the future, if you guys do consider, like when you go back down this road, is using a VA loan. Because I know you're a veteran too. Okay, good. Because if I'm not mistaken, there are some protections. It may not be against appraisal gap, but
no, it's
there are a lot of protections
against PMI.
Yeah.
That's yeah. The way the VA loan works is there's no money down required.
Yeah.
And usually if you're like FHA loans with low or no money down, if you're less than or well, if you are financing more than 80% of the value of the home, most banks will require you to pay a PMI on that.
Yeah, right.
Which is just a monthly additional charge just for the bank to gouge you more because they don't have enough collateral on the house, basically.
Yeah.
And it can be expensive. It can be a couple $100 added to your monthly bill. But for VA, there is none of that. So you can borrow 100% of the value of the home and pay no PMI. And it's one of the best benefits of being a veteran. Yes. So anyway, somebody came way over top of our offer with way more appraisal gap. And
jeez.
Which is probably a good thing because while it would have been perfect, it was way more than I wanted to spend. We would have been super house poor.
Yeah.
At that point, we would have, I would have had to question whether I could pay my subscriptions for like getting this podcast out with the amount we would have had to. It was a gorgeous home, but oh man. But you know, like the process was great, I think, for both me and Malia to go through and kind of start understanding. It really has kicked our ass into gear on finances, especially me. I've been irresponsible at probably at best with money.
Okay.
Because I've just like, I never have cared in my whole life. My grandmother basically like just took care of all my bills and I just knew that I had money. And if I wanted something crazy expensive, I would just make a couple phone calls and be like, hey, do I have enough money for this? And they'd be like, yes or no. But I never really knew how much money I had or where it was going. Or now I am very, very, very clear where my money is and what it's being spent on and how. And I'm learning about how to make more of it and how to use my money to make more money. And you know, like, it, and I'm surprised at how interested I am. Like when I do my bills every other week, mm-hmm. I'm like, I look forward to that now. Like I used to be afraid to pull up my like if I was going to go to Johnny Scott's down the street and buy some magic cards.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite sure if I had enough in my checking account to get it. Like I would be nervous to pull up my checking account and be like, oh, what if I don't have enough? I don't want to know. I'm just going to go buy it. And then Huntington will tell me if I had enough or not. And I'm definitely not, you know, don't do that anymore. So like, and we're making, like, we can see a very clear path forward. And it was all because we started down this path of buying a home. And so there's some very great realistic goals that we have, I think, and mm-hmm. some discipline that both of us need to work on. And we're both like that. That's where her and I really shine, is when we get a goal set in mind, we are really good at motivating each other towards that goal and working together on it. So very pumped about that.
Yeah, my wife's been very happy. Again, going back to the job, we've accomplished so many more house tasks in this past week than I think we have in the past 6 months.
Yeah.
Just because my stress level has significantly decreased after getting this job.
That's awesome, man. I'm so glad to hear that. Well, I did ask the Discord channel earlier this week. I told them we were finally going to be coming back and if there was anything in particular that anyone wanted to hear on this show, and Sean got on and said, I'll just read it.
Okay.
He said, I want to hear you starting that course again. Fuck the car one off and move on. Elmo is what he says. And
let's go, Sean. Bro, when I read that message, I was like, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a message in Discord that's gotten as many reactions as that one. Like,
yeah.
The emoji reactions. But yeah, that was funny. And you know, great point. I did think about that though. And you have shaken something loose here, Sean. I want to let you know, because I have sat there and thought a couple times, like, you know what? I probably am going to get back on that. All I got to do is finish up that last bit on the card thing, blah, blah, blah. And when I read this, I'm like, you know what? You're right. Fuck that car thing. I've already done it twice. This is the third time I've done it. I'm not winning any awards for this shit. Let's move on to, like, the next one's like snowboarding or something. Let's move on to that one. and just get it going. And I think I hope by our next show, I don't want to commit to it because I don't want to ruin that commitments channel. Some people have used it and it has worked out well. I don't want to sully it with my weak ass commitments. So I will say, I hope that things kind of get to a point to where I can at least look at that one by next show and have some good news to report to you on that. The last show I did talk a lot about how writing was kind of coming up.
How's that going?
It's really, I haven't had time to do any of that either, honestly. I think I kind of, as we were getting into this house thing, that kind of dominated everything for a bit. And it kind of made me sit there and think, like, you know what? All these hobbies can just kind of wait for a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Like, just full stop. We got some real life stuff going on here. Let's handle this. So I have been reading a lot, both audiobook and at night, because we stopped watching TV in bed, which... I don't know if I want to sit here at this point and be a full advocate of that and tell you, like, hey, maybe try this. I know I've said things in the past like, hey, join the 6 a.m. club, join the no snooze club. And I've gotten a couple like death threats in Discord over shit like that. So I don't want to necessarily say like, hey, turn your TV off at night if you want to go to bed. I think it has been helpful. I think if you honestly think about it, just as a psychological point of view, it's pretty clear to see why it would be beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
You're not like injecting color and sound and just insanity into your brain until it is so exhausted that you pass out drooling on yourself every night, which is what I've done for the last 40 years to go to sleep pretty much is just sit there and like I set a sleep timer on. If this sounds like you, if you set a sleep timer on your TV because you know at some point you're going to pass out watching your show, like that can't be healthy, right? There's no way that can be healthy.
Yeah. I don't know. Like ever since I started my job, like I said, this whole week, major shift in life. So like I took that opportunity to establish like a new routine, and my routine is, it's kind of old manish, but dude, I go to bed at like 9:30.
Nice.
But I'm up early, and when I get up like as soon as my alarm goes off, or if I wake up before it and I check the time and it's like, oh, 2 minutes till my alarm goes off. Old me would have been like, oh god, 2 minutes, like, you know. And now I'm just like, all right, whatever, 2 minutes. I get up, turn my alarm off, I literally get out of bed and just start rolling. I'm not gonna say that'll work for everyone. I mean, your routine's your routine, but like,
right,
it's working for me. And actually, I was so exhausted on Wednesday night, man. I was beat because my kids didn't sleep that well. And they woke us up in the middle of the night like 3 times.
Awesome.
And so I was just dead to the world. I was out before 9. It's the first time I fell asleep before my wife in like ever.
Yeah.
And she was like, holy crap, this is weird. Because she's just not used to seeing this like part of me that's like, no, I'm being responsible, you know.
Right.
But I have taken it upon myself, and I haven't figured out where I'm going to squeeze in game time into my routine yet, both development and just, you know, free time to enjoy games.
Yeah, right.
But what I do now is when my wife and I are just chilling in bed, if we're not watching a show or something, I will pull out my laptop and like play something on that. But you know, nothing that's like what I would call a dedicated moment of game time. It's just more of like opportunity.
Right.
But yeah, man, I don't know. It's weird. Trying to develop healthy habits is hard, especially if you're already in an established routine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I know things have worked for me in the past, and I'm trying. Oh, a big thing. I was going to mention this later. So we talked about kind of boning up my financial health a bit, and that has been pretty huge. my actual health has also been on my mind.
Okay.
I haven't gained like a ton of weight. I've gained a little. Like, I mean, I lost a lot of weight last year or a year and a half ago. I dropped about 50 pounds over a summer because I got really, really big. And I haven't packed on even half of that back yet, but I've probably got 15 pounds in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to feel like lethargic and like I haven't gotten to the point to where like my back's hurting again like it was, you know, or anything like that. But I'm just not liking the direction. I want it to go the other way, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
So I've tried a bunch of things in the past. I've done Weight Watchers before. Weight Watchers is relatively effective for me. I think it does a good job of teaching you how to kind of change your relationship with eating, but it doesn't do a whole lot for me in the exercise front. I have never, since being in the military, successfully been able to stick with any kind of workout regimen, like not even a little, couple weeks tops. Because I don't like it. I don't like to work out. Well, I don't like the gym. I don't like any of it.
I'll be honest. I know people think I like working out. I hate working out, bro. Like when I'm at the gym, and I guess part of this is also is like part of the content I digest. So like, I obviously am a huge fan of Jocko Willink. I'm a huge fan of David Goggins.
Yeah,
and I digest their content like it's like I'm a fat kid with candy, right? Like, you know. And so what happens in my mind is, I start to look at I literally envision myself on this internal battle going on in my mind. And there's literally multiple versions of me. It's a stupid way to think about it, but it works for me. And I sound also crazy when I talk like this, but just bear with me. It's a process.
It makes sense.
Yeah. And there's these versions of me that are always constantly in conflict with one another. There's the part that is the most common one, and that's the one that I think everyone can relate to, which is, I don't feel like working out because working out sucks. It hurts. I don't like the discomfort. I hate feeling sore. And when I'm sore, I can't function, you know? But then there's the other part of you, like there's other parts that are like logical, and it's like, yeah, but there's so many health benefits. And then there's the other part that's like, yeah, and you're just being a little bitch. Like, you know, so there's all these little stupid dichotomy of conversations going on in my brain. And I'm literally, I'll sit there like at night before I go to bed sometimes. That's just what's running through my brain because I know I got to go to the gym the next day. Yeah. And I've gotten to this point now when I am at the gym, I take it as like a personal challenge to myself, not to do better or to do like anything like crazy, although hikes are the only thing I really am competitive with myself on. But like when I'm at the gym, it's, did I get through it and did I push myself? That's all I care about. And there are some days where I thought, oh man, I'm about to make a PR. And I don't make a PR, but I know I pushed myself, and whatever mental state or physical state I was in that prevented me from hitting the PR is fine. Like, I don't care about that. I just look at it and I'm like, I still showed up today. I'm still here. And there's plenty of days I haven't wanted to go. And there is a sense of pride though, when I overcome that feeling where it's like, I wake up and I'm like, I don't really want to go today, but I go anyway. And there is that pride. And that turns into momentum, but it's hard to get that momentum started. And I fully understand that. I can't even tell you where, I can't tell you where it started. It was the health scare, but I've already discussed that in a previous episode.
Well, so, I'll tell you this. I've had my motivations for wanting to get better. Like I just talked about a couple, just want to feel better. You know, I want to look better. Like summer rolls around. This is like the time of year where it starts to hurt. I like winter clothes, because sweaters are comfortable and I can not look as fat in a sweater.
Sure.
I don't mind wearing shorts and stuff like that, but like when you're wearing, I don't want to be hot outside, but when I wear a shirt like t-shirts, I'm self-conscious in them sometimes. I'm just going to be totally transparent with everybody. It's embarrassing sometimes to wear some of the clothes that I used to be able to wear that I can't now. Yeah. You know, and I don't want that. I want to feel good in the clothes that I wear. And I, you know, so which are pretty superficial things, you know, they're important and they're painful and they're not invalid. I know that.
Yeah.
But they're fairly superficial. They're not strong enough to get you through, well, this workout sucks, I don't want to do this. It can get you through a couple weeks, you know? So I honestly, I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to throw some real money at this problem. I am going to hire a personal trainer. And I did.
That's what I did.
Yep. I got a personal trainer. It's virtual. And the reason I went virtual, I did like 2 weeks of research on this. I live in two cities. If I get a virtual trainer up here, I'm only going to see him 3 days a week, him or her. If I get a virtual trainer in Columbus, I'm only going to see them three. And sure, they can tell me like, yeah, go back and do this. And then I'll see you back here next Tuesday or whatever. But am I going to do it then? You know, if I don't have them in my ass all the time.
Yeah.
So this guy that I'm going to send his picture in the show notes. I'm going to send it right now, Zach, so you can look at it. So get ready for this. His name is Cougas or Cougas. Okay. I haven't talked to him in person yet.
Okay.
He did send me a video to introduce himself. Our first actual call is this upcoming Wednesday. This guy's an absolute monster, and I want to look just like him. Here he is. All right, coming at you. So,
holy shit.
yeah,
that's not what I was expecting.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, that in the best way, though.
Yeah. Look at his his accolades there.
Oh yeah.
He's trained MLB players. He's trained Olympians. He's
awesome.
Was an apprentice Olympic athlete in 2017. Like this guy's a monster. His arms are car tires. He's got a barrel chest. He's got long flowing locks. I mean, he's just a...
Bro, you put some armor on that man, and he is your ideal knight.
Yes. He's awesome. So that's why I picked him. I'm like, well, it's going to be real easy when I get on the call with him. He's like, well, what's your goal? They're like, I want to look like you. So all of you, when you see Cougas, and if you're, you know, before the show comes out, you're probably wondering... why I posted that there, but that's the man that's gonna make Brad look like a beefcake.
I know we're like cracking jokes and stuff, but like in all seriousness, excuse me, aim for whatever goal you want. If you want to look like Cougas and that's motivation enough, just seeing that man's picture for you to do it, go for it.
Yep.
Personally, I don't. I just want to be strong enough that like today, man, we were moving dressers up and down. We got new dressers. They've been sitting in our front room for like 3 weeks. 4 weeks, and today we finally were like, all right, we're doing this today. So moving all the old shit down, bringing all the new shit up. And old me, like 2.5 years ago, if I would have done that, I wouldn't have been able to complete the second half. I would have been able to do the first half, and I would have been so gassed that I would have told my wife, we need to take a break for like an hour. And then after that hour, I probably would have been so tired I wouldn't even want to do it. Today, for the first time in a long time, we did some real physical stuff, like lifting these dressers. And, dude, I was fine. I was like, no. I'm good. I literally am like, I could go do a hike right now, and I'd be totally cool. And, like, knowing I've gotten that far where something like that would have gassed me entirely before, you know, that was like a motivator, again, of saying, hey, you're doing a good job. Keep it up. And, you know, but yeah, no, if you want to look like Cougas though, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
He's a specimen, bro.
one of the biggest motivators, honestly, if, I think I might've mentioned the show Reacher before on here. Have we talked about Reacher?
You've brought it up before. Yeah. I think we've talked about it on here.
So they are they finished filming season two, by the way.
Okay.
And I think they said we can expect that in the fall. I don't know. But if you haven't seen season one, it's on Amazon. It's awesome. If you've watched the Tom Cruise, Jack Reacher movies, they're good. Tom Cruise, however you feel about him in his politics and religion personally, I think he's kind of a whack job. But he's an awesome actor.
He is a phenomenal actor.
Yeah, I love his movies.
His credit. And the amount of work he puts into his movies, God. The man is a workhorse.
I constantly go on Tom Cruise binges. Like, I watched Maverick the other day, and then I just had to go.
That's such a good movie.
Was a good movie. And I,
ooh, Maverick
I
is so good.
On it forever, too. But after that, I watched like Mission Impossible 1 through 4 on binge.
Nice. You know?
So Tom Cruise is great. However, he doesn't look anything like the Jack Reacher from the books. Jack Reacher from the books is like 6'5 and about the size of Cougas. And he's just a monster. And the guy that plays him in the show, who is a, he's not a nobody, but I don't recognize him from anything. He's been in a few things prior. But he is just a mountain of a man. And when he walks, when he walks into a bar in that show, it's a tone change for the whole bar. They're like, oh damn. And that's what I want. Like, I have kind of the rough frame for it. Like, I'm 6'1", broad-shouldered. I'm just a fat, pudgy guy, and I don't want to be that. I want to be a big, mountainous dude that walks into a bar, and everyone, the record skips, and it goes, erp, and everyone looks over and goes, God damn.
As one of my favorite guys I also follow, Pat McNamara, always says,
"Yeah,
you know, strong people are hard to kill." You know?
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, he's like, whether it be that you just look strong and people look at you and go, do I really want to test it? You know,
right.
Or, you know, if you are strong and you actually do get hurt, like it's much harder to kill someone who's strong and healthy. You know, your body will actually withstand much more punishment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I get it, dude. I'm with you. Like, I support you, man. Go for it.
Well, I can't wait, and I can't wait to give you guys updates, and I certainly will. But before I do that, we do have a Chris's Corner. He sent this to us, I think, about 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure we get to that, and then we'll get into a little bit more like the pop culture stuff we've been into. There's a book I want to talk about, and we can just kind of see what's going on.
I got a couple
world.
Games I want to talk about.
Yeah. Daryl and I, me and Daryl are friends again.
Yes, good. So, I know you sent me that text. I didn't really like respond.
Yeah.
But no, I saw that. You should have seen me, dude. I actually put a real smile on my face.
Yeah, me
too.
I
got really happy.
I miss Daryl. So yeah. we'll chat about that and all that. But first, let's listen to this Chris's Corner. So without further ado, welcome to Chris's Corner.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chris's Corner. Thank you for joining me for this tiny little segment. I've just finished playing Breath of the Wild. I just finished it yesterday. Finally, I wanted to beat it before the new one comes out. I don't even know when I'm going to get the new one. It's, you know, like $70. Whew. But at some point, I'm probably going to play it. So I wanted to finish the first one. Having beaten it, I was thinking, all right, what game idea can I come up with from something in Breath of the Wild? That's how we're doing this today. We're taking something out of Breath of the Wild and turning it into a cool game idea. So I'm just going to take a mechanic from that game, specifically the weapon breaking system. How do we turn the fact that weapons break into an entire video game? So how do we make a whole game based off of just the idea of weapons breaking? There's a few different games that use something like this, right? You can look at any game with durability. Okay, fine, cool. You can look at Baldur's Gate has a whole thing with the Iron Plague where like certain weapons can break because they catch this like kind of disease. That's interesting. Maybe you're a blacksmith. All right, there's the angle. You're a blacksmith and you have to protect your weapons from something. So rather than using weapons to protect yourself, as a blacksmith normally would, right? You're protecting yourself from goblins, whatever. I guess a blacksmith wouldn't normally do that, but that's the idea of making a weapon, is it's used as like a protective or it's like a protective device, right? Okay. So rather than using it as a protective device, you are now protecting your weapons from some sort of a disease or a enemy that is attacking them and trying to destroy them. Not just a thief. I mean, that's an angle you could do too. but there's some kind of durability mechanic. You're like a medic for these weapons. The game is a blacksmithing game where you are, rather than removing impurities from weapons, you're removing like plagues from them, all right? So it's like a surgery thing. Here's the pitch. You're playing, what is that game? Operation, with like the buzzing thing, right? It's Operation, except you're operating on these weapons, and they're like cute little, like, let's make them animated, let's give them personality. I've just realized that this is connected to there are a few different games that like personify weapons, right? Like, there's, not to reference another D&D inspired game, but there's a Neverwinter Nights game where one of your weapons has like the ability to speak to you. I think one of the Knights of the Old Republic game might have something like that too. I think there's an evil weapon that can talk to you, maybe. But instead, these are good weapons that you're like nursing back to health. I like the aesthetic of this. I don't know why I like the aesthetic of this so much, but I really do. So you're trying to nurse these weapons back to health, and there's like, maybe there's like a little sad village of weapons, and you like come in and you're like the doctor, and the weapons are like not trusting of you to begin with because you're a human, and like the humans have been, this is it, the humans have been using the weapons, and the weapons are all damaged and stuff. So then you come into the village, you're a human, and all these weapons, and so like, oh no, not another human. But then you're like, no, I'm here to help. I'm sorry for all the damage they've done to you. And you're like a kind, considerate blacksmith. But then there's some conflict that comes up where like people are trying to come in to like buy the weapons. Maybe you're like kind of evil and like you're kind of like a manipulative blacksmith, like you're fixing them, but then sometimes you're like, oh, that weapon didn't make it, right? But then you're actually selling it to someone because it's all fixed up. There's all sorts of cool angles on this. I'm like starting to mix this with like a Graveyard Keeper vibe where like you're kind of hiding things from the village and like using the corpses of these weapons. This is maniacal. I love how many different angles you can go on this. This is such a cool concept. If anybody makes this, tell me. And if nobody makes this, if anybody starts working on this, tell me so that I don't start working on it one day. This is cool. This is interesting. You know what? Yeah, I like this concept. There's so many ideas inside of this. Feel free to get after it, because I don't want to work on the art for this. That seems like way too much for my skills. But have at, come up with more cool ideas off of it if you can. I don't know if you guys have ever played the old like Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights, these things, but I find any game that has an evil weapon that has like a voice inside of it, I kind of love it. There's a careful balance on it, but I kind of love it, and building off that would be cool. How did this start with Breath of the Wild? Whatever. We got there, the durability thing. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening last week when I was all aggressive about writer's block and all that stuff. Got through it. That's how it works, right? You can't let that writer's block last too long. That's everything for this week. I'm sending it back to the show. Thank you all. Have a good week. Have fun with it. I'll see you next time.
Wow. All right. I have to say that Chris, this is number 8 of these, and we're roughly getting somewhere between, you know, 60 and triple digit downloads every episode. And if you guys aren't mining some gold off of these ideas that he's throwing out, I don't know what you're doing with your time. Like, that might have been his best one. Like, there was so many going through my head that I was thinking of. You know, one thing, I know, Zach, I know you said you hadn't heard of High on Life. It's a newer game. It just came out a couple months ago. There was still snow on the ground, but that wasn't all that long ago. It's Justin Roiland doing most of the voices, which is the voice of Rick and Morty. So it's essentially a Rick and Morty game, but all of your weapons talk and are alive, and they're hilarious. The knife loves stabbing people, very vulgar. Like, says things like, I'm going to cut you a new asshole and watch all your shit fall out of you. Stuff like that. It's wonderful. Awesome.
Dude, I love Chris's Corner. He got me pumped about just something that doesn't even exist. And I also like that he constantly brings up older games that I've played.
Mm-hmm.
I know with our in our older episodes, I said I was going to provide a list of all of like the party based like CRPGs that I've played.
Yeah.
And I still have that list. I actually went back through our old messages because I don't know if we ever posted it. So I'm going to post it in this show's notes. This is a side tangent. So I'm going to post it in this show's notes right now because it's a very extensive list and it's got a lot of really good games on there. And all of these, I would literally recommend every single one on this list.
Yeah.
Some
of those Pillars of Eternity are on Game Pass right now too, I believe.
Yeah, I have Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2 on there. And I've only put what I've played on there. So some of the expansions are not on my list because I haven't played them. But yeah, dude, he gets me pumped. Every time I hear him say anything about like some of these old games, I'm like, man, I remember that game. That game was the shit. So I just like, yeah. But yes, I like his idea. I like the idea that you're like a healer, but for weapons. But you can also be a dick and say, you know what? You're getting sold, but I'm going to tell your buddies you're dead. Oh, dude, just to like make the game even more fun. Like you do that, and then all of a sudden you do it to another weapon, and they find each other on a battlefield, and they're dudes who are wielding them.
Yeah.
Go against each other, and they're like, wait a minute.
Oh.
Like, dude, what?
Yeah, there's some fun stuff going on there.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And then that's how we get weapons that possess people. Oh, my goodness. Yep, here we go. We're going.
Dude.
It's down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, oh, man. I'm distracted at this list. I know we've talked about Pool of Radiance on this show before, and I love seeing that on this list.
Uh-huh.
Man. All right, I'm not gonna.
And I even added little notes next to them. I gave you the links to every single one. So like,
yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. So if you guys are interested, it's a ton of really. I recommend every single one of these games.
They're old school, but they're worth it. There's some of the best.
One I'm gonna also recommend is Summoner. That game is crazy good. It's very old school. Only play that one. Summoner 2 and 3, I never even played 3. 2 was trash.
Yeah.
It went way off the rails, completely different from the first game. And also, even if you don't want to play Summoner, just look up the like behind the scenes videos they have. Because even in the game, you can look this up. There's this video of them playing D&D.
Yeah. Nice.
Dude, it is so funny. There's like this Cho'Goth looking character who's talking about like how he wants to go talk to the barmaid.
That's awesome.
He's like, well, how big are her boobs? Like, dude, it's so funny. The whole thing is just the DM the whole time is like, why does that matter? Like,
that's awesome.
It's a really good skit. They threw it in there. Don't know why. They even animate it in the game. It's actually funny as hell. You can't find it like physically in the game. It's through the main menu. But yeah, all of those games, every single one, recommended. And I also recommend Creating Chris's Idea.
Yes. Yeah, please. And in any of his previous ones too. I mean, he's thrown out some solid gold. There's one thing I want to say. You know, you should give him credit and let him know if you're making it. But if you decide to start making a game and then Chris is already underway and then I decide, like, I think I've mentioned this in the past. Like, I have never shied away from kind of talking about game ideas I've had on here, and I don't think you guys should either.
No.
Like, even if you guys are working on the same kind of game, it's not going to be the same exact game. It's, you know, it's not a zero-sum game in the industry either. Mm-mm. Like, how often are two shooters released in the market, two AAA shooters right up against each other, and they both make a shitload of money and they're both just fine, you know? Like, it happens all the time. Don't worry about if you guys are working on a similar project, you know, if you're both inspired by Chris. You know, Chris inspired himself. It was interesting to hear that, the process of that, like where he started with, let's talk about the weapon breaking system in Breath of the Wild, and then ended up with like this fantastic idea, and kind of watching that process.
Yep.
But yeah, if that inspired you, then go make it, and don't worry about if anybody else is doing it. But if you do, you should give Chris credit, because that was genius pouring out of there. All right. Let me get into a couple of my pop culture things that I had going on. First of all, I wanted to talk about Stephen King for a second.
Okay.
I am now on his second book, like physical book that I read. I think I talked about The Institute a couple months ago. I got for Christmas. It was the first book I finished cover to cover in a very long time. In fact, I can't remember the first physical book that like that you hold in your actual hands and turn the pages that I finished. I can't even begin to think of what that might have been. It's been a decade or more probably. But anyway, finished that one. That was a good book. I had listened to one of Stephen King's books previously. I listened to The Outsider, which is now an HBO show. Also written very well. And for my birthday last month, I got Fairy Tale, which I think, let me double check this real quick. I think that's his latest release. Stephen King latest book is newest book is Fairy Tale. Okay. Is that right? Yeah, September. Oh yeah, he has another one coming out, but Fairy Tale is his latest one. It's a very good book. Essentially, like this is just on the back of the book, so I'm not ruining anything, but he basically runs into this old man in his town and there's some stuff going on in the guy's shed. Presumably a portal to another world or something like that. I'm struggling with this one. I got to be honest. And I'm a little upset because I turned my brother on to Stephen King with this one. I'm like, dude, the last couple of books I've read of his have been great. I know this is gonna be good. And to be fair, like The Institute was a slow burn at the beginning too. He does a lot of like very in-depth character development, a lot of really just hammering the setting home. And this one, though, I think it maybe got a little out of hand because I'll tell you, I'm on page, I think 170, 165, okay. 170, somewhere around there. Percentage wise, looking at my bookmark, I'm probably about a little over a quarter of the way through the book.
Wow.
Somewhere around a quarter. So far, where I've been with the story is old man falls off a ladder, almost dies. Boy helps said man, saves his life, care of his dog barking. Helps take care of the dog while he's in the hospital, falls in love with the dog, takes care of the man when he comes home. That's it.
Oh, okay.
There's been a couple little nuggets of like foreshadowing, like this guy has a bucket of gold, like little BBs that are solid gold. He has a full bucket of them in a safe in his bedroom. Not real sure where those came from. And there are some weird sounds coming from the shed sometimes. I think they've mentioned it like three times at this point.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's been a lot of setup about this kid and his life and his alcoholic dad and his mom dying very horribly in a bad accident when he was young. And so I'm struggling with it. However, I'm looking forward, like, because here's the thing. It's called Fairy Tale. They've alluded to the fact that there's this secret world in this shed. And all I want to know is I want the story in that world, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm excited, but here I am a quarter of the way through the book, and we haven't even gotten there yet. So I'm gonna reserve my critique on that one.
Yeah.
But as far as the writing goes, like, if the stuff that I just explained sounds kind of boring, but somehow Stephen King makes even that interesting. Like, I'm invested at this point.
Yeah.
But
there is beyond a book series. Oh, here, can finish what you got to say, and then I'll get to what I got.
Well, I'll just get to the other book. The audiobook I've been listening to is called New Arcadia, which is it's a newer book. I don't know the name of the author right now. The audiobook is read by John DiMaggio, It's made by a lot of there's a lot of voice actors in it. What's his name? Matt Mercer is in it too, by the way. Ooh. From Critical Role.
Nice.
He also does Illidan in World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. He plays one of the primary characters. But John DiMaggio, if you don't know who that is, does the voice of Fry and Bender and Professor Farnsworth in Futurama, along with tons of other cartoons you've watched, I'm sure. But so he narrates it, and he's about the only great thing about the book. Mm. I'm nearly done with it. It feels like a not so subtle attempt to rip off Ready Player One to me.
Okay.
Which is a shame, because if they would have just not worried about the pop culture references, I think it would have ended up being a really good book. But like, it is so obvious and out of place when so the preface for this character is like, oh, I just randomly spout out 1990s and 1980s culture, and I just do it. I don't know why. So, but he does it all the time. Like he'll say, oh, like this movie, director, blah, 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 1987. It's like, oh, that's so cringy.
Yeah.
And it has no place. It doesn't serve to push the plot forward. It doesn't apply to anything. It's just like, oh, Ready Player One made a lot of money off pop culture references, so I'm going to find a way to shoehorn them into my story.
Ugh.
But beyond that, it is actually a pretty good story. Mm. It deals with a pandemic, you know, like you can definitely tell it was written during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Cause, the one in this book is way more deadly, and, it is about 3 years. It's about right where we're at in the pandemic, except at that point there, you know, like people are still held up in their house and everything's delivered by drone, and there's bands of roving bandits that are infected. And the idea is that they've created this virtual reality game world because they have an antidote for the virus, but they don't want to administer it yet because people have been away from each other for so long that they don't know how to interact together anymore. So they want to use this virtual reality world that they've created to teach people to interact again, which I think is a really good premise, because I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah.
Well, like, I know I'm still kind of socially awkward in some situations, and it's annoying to me. And it was because of the pandemic.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. But anyway, that one is called New Arcadia. I'll put a link in the show notes just to make sure that it gets proper credit. I'll also link the Stephen King books that I mentioned as well.
Cool.
What were you going to say? I'm sorry. Kept rambling.
You're good. You were talking about like a slow burn start to books. There's a 2-book series. There may be more to it now, but at least when I read it, it was only 2 books still. called The Innocent Mage and The Awakened Mage. Those are 2 books. Okay. And The Innocent Mage is the first one, and The Awakened Mage is the second one. Now, it's been a really long time since I read these books, but I do remember that the first book, I'm not even kidding, it's like 60 or 70% of this book is nothing but a slow burn.
Yeah.
And for some reason, oh, I actually know why I kept reading it. Because I was in the military at the time, and my buddy who read them said, dude, trust me. He's like, just push through it. So I did. I was like, fine, I'll finish it. And I'm not kidding, it gets to the moment where things pop off, and I couldn't stop reading. I was like, oh my gosh. And the slow burn made it hurt and make me invested so much more. Because when characters start dying, I'm like, no, no, how dare you kill this sweet, young, innocent person? Like, dude, it was like, oh my God. It made sense, dude. It all made sense in that moment. You're like, they teach you their mundane day-to-day life and their interactions with one another. So that way, when that moment comes, when it all gets shattered, you're like, oh my God. And there's like deaths you don't see coming. It's just like, what the fuck? Literally the whole way through the book. And then The Awakened Mage is solid too. I'll probably find those, put them in the show notes. But I do recommend those 2 books. I haven't read beyond that, if there are any beyond that. But yeah, it was one of those books that the whole time you see what's happening, you see what's gonna happen, but you're like, when's the thing?
Right.
Like, when is the thing? I know the thing is coming, but when is it? And when it does hit, I don't know, man. It was just the way it was written. It all made sense. It all clicked on me in that moment. So maybe, hopefully, what you're reading ends up being like that. But
I have every bit of confidence it will. It's just Stephen King.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, it's, we've only gotten a little bit of any kind of anything dealing with horror. My only frustration is, like, my brother's getting frustrated. And this is his first, like, foray into Stephen King, and I was talking him up really heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's sitting here going, dude, if I was reading this, he's listening to it, and I'm reading the actual hardback.
Mm-hmm.
He said to me last time I talked to him, he goes, dude, if I was, like, reading this, I would not have been able to finish it at this point.
Yeah.
And I can get that. But, like I said, Saturday morning, I got up, and I went down. I get up early. I usually get up way earlier than everybody else in the house. And I sat on the couch and I read it for 3 hours straight. And I enjoyed it. But it wasn't, when I really looked at it, nothing really exciting happened. I am just at the point that I think some exciting shit's about to happen. I don't want to, I've already thrown a couple spoilers to the story in just my brief synopsis, so I don't want to say any more about it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a thing I've been waiting to happen that seems like it's about to happen. So I think shit's about to get real.
Nice.
And I think you're right. The only thing is there hasn't been a wealth of characters that I've become invested in.
Yeah.
They've really only, currently, if you count the dog, there's three main characters that they've been circling around this whole time, and they're great. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest things is I love the relationship that they're painting between the dog and the boy,
mm-hmm.
like him falling in love with this dog, this elderly German shepherd. If you've ever owned a dog or you're a dog person at all, you can relate to all of that emotion that he does so good at painting on the page. Like, it's awesome. So that's what has gotten me this far. But it's like, all right, the book's called Fairy Tale. Like, mm-hmm. you know what it's like? Do you remember the movie, From Dusk Till Dawn?
No.
All right. Some of our listeners might be able to relate to this then. It's George Clooney and... Is it Quentin Tarantino's his brother? I don't remember whoever's his brother. They're like bandits of some sort. I don't remember all the finer details, but I do remember this. So the first maybe 45 minutes of the movie, it's like a heist movie.
Okay.
Like, they're running from the law and they're running across the desert and they kidnap a van with a RV with a family in it. They like kidnap the whole RV and they're all driving and trying to get away from the cops.
Mm.
So that's the movie they're selling you. And then out of nowhere, literally nowhere, it turns into a vampire movie. Like it like minute 46.
That's amazing.
And that's what I feel like this movie or this book's gonna do. It's like, all right, we got this boy, we got this dog, we got this old man, we got the guy's alcoholic dad. I know at some point we're gonna go into a fairy tale land. I haven't gotten any closer to that in 165 pages, so
yeah.
So I think it'll happen, and I think it's about to happen.
Sounds like getting there.
Yeah, I'll let you. I've got, I don't know, I don't have much to talk about Gamefront. We did, Daryl and I guess we could talk about Daryl, but let's let you go first for a minute.
All right, so there's really only three games I want to talk about. One, because it's a technological amazing masterpiece that uses Unreal Engine 5 to its full potential.
Ooh.
Not a game I'll probably be interested in it, but I don't really think a lot of our listeners would be. But I still recommend looking into it just because of the amazing technology. And I'm going to preface this with, yes, this is a game. This is not real footage.
Okay.
Because it is so incredible that they have been accused of using real footage. And a YouTube channel that I follow, Corridor Crew, actually did a VFX react on this game. because these guys are all VFX artists, and they actually explain why they know this is not real. And basically, they took scans of real-life stuff and put them into the game as, like, textures. But again, this is Unreal Engine 5. It's called Unrecord. UN record. So
Unrecord.
Unrecord. Okay. The reason that name is picked is because of the story. I'll just read you its Steam page. Unrecord is a single-player FPS that tells the story of a tactical police officer from the perspective of his body camera. As you work to solve a complex case, you'll need to use your tactical and detective skills to succeed. And boy, let me tell you, this game looks amazing.
Dude, like, yeah, I'm watching the Steam footage of it. This is nuts.
That is a game, Brad. That is not real.
What?
Dude, I was so blown away. And I will also link the VFX Artist React episode on Corridor Crew as well on YouTube, because dude, I've seen this video and I didn't believe it when I saw it. I thought it was just some joke, and so I chalked it off to nothing. And then I saw them do a VFX Artist React to it, and I'm like, oh, I gotta watch this. And I watch it every Saturday anyway, so like, I'm a nerd. But I was pumped about it, and then they're like, yeah, no, this is real. This is like a real game. And I'm like, holy crap. And yeah, so I just wanted to bring that game up because the technological stuff happening here and showing what Unreal Engine 5 is really capable of really blew my mind. Especially now, when I came to that realization that it's...
Yeah, some of this, it seems to be... It depends on like the lighting. Some of it looks more realistic than others, but all of it looks insane.
Yeah, the developers actually have an FAQ down there if you're really interested, where they actually show them in like the development environment running through the walls, like literally running through the walls. So they show you like, no, this is we actually made this in engine.
Wow, you didn't. Yeah, dude. So did you say they rendered real images, or they
took real images for some of this? Like, there's actually a part where he's popping the corner, if you're looking at that video on there, at around the 25 second mark.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after that, he pops the corner to shoot the guy. If you look at the corner wall to his right, you can actually see that does look a little video gamey just by the way some of the lighting hits. But like, you would not catch that detail unless you're like really looking at it, you know?
But it's that part, the very beginning of that video where he's walking into the graffiti building.
Yeah, the lens flare, like how the lens like deals with the lighting like a real camera would. I'm like, what? Dude,
yeah,
so amazing. So I just wanted to point that out because the tech on this is phenomenal. I think everyone should look at this just because of how amazingly done this is.
Yeah, whether you play it or not.
Yeah, like just even if you just watch videos on YouTube of people playing this is crazy. Like, this is crazy, dude. It's still very early. Like, it doesn't even have a release date.
Right.
But just I just wanted to point that out.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. The other two games I wanted to talk about was one that I found last night called Super Fantasy Kingdom. And the other one, which is from a developer I'm pumped about, is Inkbound. So I'll start with Super Fantasy Kingdom just because that's really easy. This game is a roguelite city builder. It's basically like a defense game where you have two phases of the game, but they work simultaneously. You have your base building side, which helps you expand the world and unlock things for future playthroughs. And then you have like the defense side. And the longer your defense can hold, the more likely you are to build up resources to unlock further things. That's basically the gameplay in a nutshell. You can use it to unlock units, upgrade units, all that little fun fantasy stuff. It looks like they have a bunch of character classes planned. In the demo, you can only play one. I'm pretty sure you can unlock the second one. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. But it is there for you to click, but it says not unlocked yet. Okay. Yeah, so I was playing that demo last night. There's no release date on it yet. They said they said this year, but there's no like actual date. Okay, just thought it'd be a fun little game for you guys to try out. It's all made by one guy.
Nice.
That was the other thing that really got me pumped to talk about it here, because you know, I know a lot of us here are solo. So just looking at something you could make by yourself, this guy's been doing it for a year. So I think he's done a phenomenal job for what time he's put in.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then the last game I want to talk about was Inkbound. If any of you have played Monster Train, it's made by the same developer. And it looks good. It's turn-based. Like if you've played Slay the Spire, it's kind of like that. But I like its turn-based combat because I was watching the preview videos and stuff that I think I shared in Discord with everybody, a review video that I watched. And the combat felt very Quest 64 for anybody who's ever played that one. I'm going back on this.
Oh, yeah, looks cool.
Yeah, and like, yeah, you can like run around in your little circle of movement. And what I like about that is that's how Quest 64 was. It was turn-based, but you could like run around in your little circle until you figured out where you wanted to be, and then you could use your like abilities from there. And but yeah, I just thought this was a cool game. I don't really have much to say about any of these games I've pointed out, but Inkbound is the one I'm really looking forward to. I will share again that review video, all three of these games, as well as the VFX Artist React video. So I'll make sure I get all of that in there.
Well, you won't have to wait long for Inkbound because its early access goes live in approximately 15 hours.
Let's go.
So that one's ready to roll. I don't know if you're planning on waiting for that. But
probably not. That's one I'm probably going to dive in pretty quick, to be totally honest.
Cool. Awesome. Well, the other news that I had, one of my best friends, probably actually my best friend from childhood, Daryl, is we hadn't really been talking much over the last few years for several reasons, and it's been kind of a bummer for me, and I was hoping that we could eventually resolve some of those things, and we have, and or at least we're well on the way to recovering a friendship there. So it's been really nice kind of having him back. He's, you know, Zach is familiar with Daryl. He's part of our OG gaming crew. Generally, I would say, at least for me, for a long time there, if I was playing video games, it was usually the three of us playing together for probably a span of like 5+ years there for a while. And it's kind of a bummer that we haven't been able to do that in a bit. So yeah, Daryl and I have been playing some Warhammer, and my brother Chad has been joining us on some Warhammer too. So
nice.
Yeah, it's been really fun. Total War Warhammer 3. I know we've talked about that a little bit. I never really gave that game much of a shake. I didn't like the races that it came out with, honestly. Like,
yeah,
the best part of the races is chaos. Like if you are a chaos fan, or you can at least tolerate chaos, well, chaos sucked before Total War Warhammer 3.
Yeah,
they were almost unplayable, and not only did they get fixed, but they also, in true, you know, Games Workshop form, because they always S the D of chaos, which is why I hate them. I'll get into that in a second. But they now have the most broken armies. They have, I don't know, 6 or 7 different types of chaos armies to choose from. All, and it's great. It's wonderful. However, I can play none of them because I hate chaos. I feel the same about chaos as I do about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Jeez. I will never draft them in one of my fantasy teams. I don't care how, if I've got first pick and there's a clear choice for first pick on the draft, if they're on the Steelers, I've never ever had a Steelers player on any of my fantasy teams, and I never will. I'm not quite that vindictive, but it's close. I to this date have not played any chaos. I have no plans to play any chaos. It makes me feel dirty. And Daryl's a big reason for that, actually, because when we played a lot of tabletop back in the day, Daryl would always play chaos. And chaos is busted, and chaos takes no talent in order to win. There's no strategy involved. Here's how you win with chaos. You spend all your points on 2 or 3 models, and you march straight forward, and that's it. That's all you have to do. There's no thought. There's no finesse. There's no board position. Nothing. You just shit out three huge models that, you know, Games Workshop collected $500 from you to buy those three models. And then you just roll them across the board. Nothing can kill them, and they kill everything in their wake. And then you get to say how great of a general you are. And I hate them for that. So there's my rant.
Woo! Tell us rant, how you really feel, Brad.
Rant over.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I talked about it when it first came out. I played it. I remember jumping into the Khorne faction the first time around, just because I like Khorne. I'm really not a fan of anything else Chaos. I just like Khorne. He's great. I just love the absurdity of it. Blood for the blood god, skulls for the skull throne, right? Like, I don't know. Right. It's absurd as fuck. I love it. And that's just one of the reasons I picked that one for this particular version of the series. And I played it too normal. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was when I actually started to appreciate what they did with this particular version of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did good with it in Warhammer 2, even Warhammer 1, but like 3 really showed their design chops, because the campaign map, I played it trying to keep my order high and have production buildings and all that other stuff, and then I was like losing, and I'm like, what the fuck? Then it dawned on me, so I started a new game, and I was like, all right. I just went pure rampage, bro. Did not give a shit about public order. In my mind, the lower my public order was, the better. Because that meant I'd get rebels, and rebels equals fights. Fights equals skulls, which also
more blood
equals,
for the blood god.
Which also equals more free armies. Yeah. And so I was like, let's go. And that's what I would do. And then I'd have like these, what I call power turns, where it was like, for 20 turns, I'm just like rampaging through, just slaughtering everything, and then I have like a nice little like another 20 turns of, okay, I just like wrecked face, now I need to reconsolidate real quick, get ready for the next one. And I liked that they did that, because it felt very corn like you know, in terms of the lore. So I was like, wow, they really nailed that. I started playing Nurgle. I hate Nurgle's playstyle. I'm not
Nurgle's,
a fan.
Yeah, Nurgle's tough.
Yeah, Nurgle's a hard one to do, and not saying it's a bad playstyle, it's just not for me. Right. I'm not into that. But Khorne was a playstyle that I never had in Total War that really is one that I like to play, which is that hyper aggressive. You know, you could make a one man doom stack with your guy that you start with. I forget his name. But you could. He can be a one man army. He can literally fight.
Is it Bellicor?
No, that's the one for the Undivided or the regular Chaos. No, oh god, I can't remember his name.
But apparently Bellicor was rated the strongest and most ridiculous guy in
100%. Yeah, Bellicor is stronger than this guy. And Bellicor can also be a one man doomstack.
Yeah.
Both of these guys can be. I've literally watched YouTubers show them against countless different army comps, and they can take them all by themselves in the campaign. You level them up, and they're not hard to level up either. That's the crazy part. So within like 50 turns, you could have a one-man doomstack that can take on most armies except for like the big-named generals who have, you know, maxed out units to begin with. But once you get them maxed out, they can take those armies on by themselves. You pretty much just have an army there to be fodder, so your dude can just freely kill whoever.
So remember what I just said about playing Chaos on tabletop?
Yeah, no, 100%.
That's exactly why, how it worked.
Yeah, and granted, I didn't play my Khorne army like that, although that dude was really strong, and I will admit, I made him very strong intentionally. I tend to do that with my generals in Warhammer games. Like I like to make them, I like to make them strong enough to stand against multiple units by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I did that with my dwarf armies. I've done it with my orcs. The only ones I never really did it with were like dark elves. And I tried playing Empire. I fucking hate Empire, bro.
Empire's not bad in Total War. I never wanted to play it on tabletop because I thought, man, I'm playing a fantasy game. Why would I want to play human knights in?
Yeah.
Like the steam tank and stuff is cool. They're a little cooler now. Like, I actually, especially since I've been reading some of the Warhammer lore, like Matthias Thalmann and some of the Tales of the Old World, you like hear about these witch hunters and bright wizards and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They're interesting, but they're still not as cool as like the green skins and
dude, even the Bretonians are cooler than them. Like,
no, the Bretonians are bitches. I think they're cooler. They're a bunch of knights, but they don't have, what do you think? Do they have any real artillery or any massive anything? They're just knights.
No, but their knights are pretty fucking strong.
They're cool.
Knights might as well be there.
Yeah, dudes. I mean, they're literally all just mounted cavalry.
I don't like either of those factions, to be totally fair. Like, they're the bottom of the barrel for me.
Right, that's
Empire
true.
And
they're just
Bretonia.
Boring-ass humans.
Yeah, and like, I've even tried playing Bretonia in Total War, and I'm like, wow, these mechanics are dumb.
I think
it's something to do with like peasants or something, and you have to manage your peasant population. If you draft them into the army, they no longer work for you, so you have like reduced income or something. I don't know.
Nah,
it was dumb, and I was like, this is stupid. And you have to maintain honor. Like, if you do any like dirty tactics, bro, like it lowers your honor. And it's like, come on, like, what is this game? I was like, this is the Warhammer universe, okay? Like, dirty tactics is the name of the game. So I was like, fuck this faction.
Yeah, I think Bretonia might be the only one I've never actually spent any time playing. I think I've messed with all of them at least.
I tried playing them both. Empire is the most vanilla. If you've played any previous Total War game, that's probably the one you'd want to start with.
Yeah, I liked Empire.
Like the historical titles. Like if you played a historical title, Empire is who you should probably play first. If you're diving in for the first time.
Well, I'm currently in a campaign I'll probably jump into right after we're done recording here for a bit with Daryl. And I'm playing Grom the Paunch, the Goblin King.
Nice.
And holy shit, is he fun.
Yeah.
He makes all of the goblins like way more powerful than they should be. They're deceptively.
That's good, though.
Yeah.
I love when they do that. I do, because like it just makes the game so much more fun. Like
it is cool.
There's a nice diversity, you know. It's not like
each army has its own
black
like,
orcs.
Yeah, they have this interesting mechanic where, like, for Grom, he collects ingredients and then throws them in his pot and makes these stews and different foods that give him these 15 round buffs, and they're powerful ass faction wide buffs.
Oh wow!
At least army wide buffs. But yeah, it's fun. We've said this, Chad and me and Daryl played last night and one night before that, just to kind of check out. Cause I remember when the game was coming out, it was right around the time we probably talked about this in some of our earliest podcasts. I think that's when, 3 came out.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking about some of the multiplayer changes that they were planning on doing, and I never really got to experience them.
Mm-hmm.
But we said multiple times while we were playing the other night and last night, the three of us, that this is finally the way that the game was supposed to be in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, so Total War Warhammer 3 is what it should have been all along. So if you ever tried it and you didn't like the multiplayer and you were more used to like Endless Legends kind of multiplayer, they finally matched, for the most part, everything that they needed to take from Endless Legend. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about, I know we talked about simultaneous turns on the podcast. I'm sure I ranted about that for a while.
Yes.
They fixed that. It all works really, really well. It even works a little bit better than Endless Legend does in some sense. They made diplomacy really easy. Diplomacy was cumbersome a little bit.
Yeah.
They added this new, it's called quick something. But anyway, it just kind of like goes over all of your current standings and kind of gives you some suggestions about like, hey, you probably could pull this off if you want to. Mm-hmm. Like, you probably get a non-aggression pack going with this dude.
Yeah.
Or if there's just no shot of you getting, like, if you're not going to be able to ask for peace because they just hate the shit out of you, it doesn't even let you waste your time. It's gonna be like, they're not gonna fucking do that.
don't even
ask. It's not gonna happen. So, but then there's a bunch of other things too, but it's really
And extremely you guys are polished. Playing the Immortal Empires map?
Yes.
Okay, I was going to say that. I think that's the best way to play now.
It is, and I haven't looked at the other ones. I'm interested, but they need to add more races. They just added the Chaos Orbs. I am interested in checking them out, but again, Chaos.
Oh, my God. It's like, they are like Warhammer 40K.
Yeah.
In Total War Warhammer Fantasy. It really is. Like,
that's cool.
I watched a video of someone doing it, and I'm like, oh my God, it's like just like a bolter line just or an Imperial Guard line just firing away.
Yeah. They look
crazy.
But I'm gonna probably hold out. There's some neat campaigns. There's that one campaign where it's only three players and it's only the three armies, and it looks like a very specific story driven campaign that you co-op on.
Hmm.
Or maybe even go head to head. I'm not sure, but it looked interesting. But Immortal Empires is the only one that unlocks all of the different, like everything that they've ever released. You can play with the Total War Warhammer 3 rule set.
Yeah, I would say, though, if you've never bought Total War Warhammer 1 or 2 and you get 3, you play Immortal Empires, you will only be able to play the races from 3. Because they do track what you've purchased. So if you're interested in that, just wait for a sale. Usually one and two go on sale quite frequently. So just get them in like a bundle.
And they get caught up in like all of the different kind, like whatever relations they're in with or what developers they have. So you might get a Games Workshop is on a sale. And then I don't know, the Total War series might be on sale. Mm. And then whoever the studio that produced them. And then, you know, so like they do constantly go on sale.
Yeah.
I don't know what it would cost to, I bought everything that they've ever offered. I have not, except for the Chaos Dwarves. I haven't bought them yet.
But yeah, I haven't bought everything. There's still a few things I haven't gotten that I'm going to get around to, like the Wood Elves. I still haven't bought them.
I bought them, never played them. But
I want to, because I like the idea of having that skirmisher play style with like having your stealth range units that can fire while moving. That just sounds fun to give it a shot. And I've seen them do some serious damage, even in like online multiplayer, ranked matches.
The most expensive one, except for the latest. Ugh. I make it a point to go through their DLC list and make sure that all of it says in library. And it bums me out that I see this Chaos Dwarf one that doesn't say in library. So that'll change soon. I'll have to. It's got mixed reviews. I don't give a shit. I have to have it. Anything else? Let's see. Just a little menial shit. I fired up Fable 3 yesterday. Thought about going playing through that. I might do it. I might not. Valheim's still going strong. Any of you guys want to jump in on that? I know some of you were going pretty strong in it for a while. I know Joe and I, Ollie's dad, have been geared up to take on Bone Mass for some time, and we just haven't done it yet because of a lot of the previous, you know, aforementioned distractions and not having a lot of game time. But I feel like pretty soon, and if you want to get on, we've got enough gear to throw some gear on you, and you can take on Bone Mass with us, and you'll have some maxed out level gear up to Bone Mass. So full iron plate, level 4 weapons, whatever you want, baby. We got you. All right. Anything else on your end, Zach?
I got nothing, man.
All right, well, let's take a peek at the community here. Let's see how we did hit a milestone in our actually two milestones I want to bring up. First of all, this is episode 25 of the official episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty big deal. 25 episodes. We have consistently been trending over 100 downloads in 30 days. So that has been great. Thank you guys for that. Even with us kind of going to a monthly format, which is not our intention, by the way, we don't plan on sticking with monthly. We do, in fact, at some point plan on going to weekly. But right now I think we'll settle for biweekly. Mm-hmm. But, so apologize for the infrequency, but you guys are still sticking with us and, What a great community we have. Thank you guys so much for that. One of the other milestones is we hit 2,000 downloads total. So if you remember, it took us just over or almost exactly a year, right, for us to hit 1,000?
Yeah.
And that was in like October, right?
Yes.
So just over 6 months later, so in almost half the time, we've now doubled that. And we are currently at over 2,100 downloads. So huge, huge deal. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. All time, though, I think we're still missing that elusive Africa down our listener. Every other continent in the world has been, well, you know, besides Antarctica, but every other continent in the world has been represented. To the rest of you guys out there from every continent in the world, thank you so much for listening to us. Please continue to do so. If you'd like to get involved, Discord link is in our show notes. That's the best way to do it. And let me just look at our last episode and see if any new locations pop out at me here. Let's see. I didn't usually I look at this before. I don't think Sunnyvale, California has shown up for me before.
That sounds new.
Yeah, I know we've gotten some California, and that might be one of our California listeners just driving, but it's three downloads from there, so it looks like maybe someone new. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I think I've mentioned Amsterdam. Sakaicho, Tokyo. Might have mentioned that, but it's fun to say if I didn't. And Federal Way, Washington. I think we had a Washington, D.C. at one point. That might, again, be the government listening in on us, but it could be a legitimate listener. Yeah. There's also Lannis, Buenos Aires, which I don't think we have. That's a new one as well.
That one's definitely new. Yeah.
Yeah. So numbers-wise, 55%. This is interesting. So almost our United States is almost getting knocked out of the majority of our listeners by the rest of the world.
Wow.
55% of our listeners in the last episode came from America. Germany, man, huge in Germany. 14% out of Germany, UK and France coming up behind that, 7% and 4%. Then we got Switzerland, Thailand, Canada, Australia, Hungary, and Argentina all hitting the top 10 list there.
Nice.
So awesome, man. That's really great. It's really fun looking at this from all over the world, seeing everybody that's found us and joined our community. And can't tell you how much we appreciate that. We'll try to show you a little more of that appreciation by not waiting so long for our next show.
Yeah, we're getting back into some normalcy here. I mean, I'm still in school, but it will never be as intense as it's been these past two semesters. So things are leveling out.
Yep. And we'll stop making excuses. I feel like we've been making a lot of excuses. I'm not pointing that at you, Zach. That's more me. But and Chris, or not Chris. Chris, thanks for Chris's corner, obviously. But Sean, thanks for the kick in the ass and telling me to get the fuck up off the car game. That's old news. It's enough already. Let's move on. And I will do that. Hopefully, have some good news on our next show. But you'll have to tune in to find out next time on the Distinguished Humans Indie Game Dev Club. So we will see you then. Thanks again for stopping by, and have a wonderful rest of your day, night, or morning.
Thank you, everybody.